Thank you so much, Carl. So glad to be here and to see all of you. So let's see, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to talk about today. I've been thinking a lot about just what we all have been through in the past 2.5 years, and also, our current state, the current state of the world, our planet, the world around us, our relationships, societal, community circumstances, and so on. It's quite a bit. It's quite a bit. And this morning, I get these ads from I'm on the email list for CEIIS, and so they have a class coming up that is around the trauma, the societal trauma of climate change. And basically the knowing about basically knowing our fate, seeing what is unfolding, seeing what is in front of us, and how what the impacts are on our persons and on our emotional bodies and on our community. I thought that was so interesting. So there's actually a lot of study on this currently around the trauma that people are experiencing through climate change and, of course, the many other phenomena that are surrounding us. I want to share my screen for a moment. I'm going to show you something else that I saw. Can I do that? Who can enable me to share my screen? Yes, now. All right. Here it is. So I saw this as well today, and I wanted to share it with you. So this is Tolosa. So this is a basically a utopian city. So there's another billionaire, and this is his big dream. So this is something they could all be doing with their money as opposed to flying to space. But he is creating this. I think they said something. They're starting off with $400 billion. And he's creating this city that he wants to be a society. It's an equitable and sustainable future. This is not an advertisement for Tolosa. I just want to show you this concept, this way of thinking. So they want to have, they're going to actually be taking applications for people. Here's a concept drawing, and it's all going to be green and sustainable. This is their big idea. They want it to be diverse, and they're thinking of new ways about healthcare and education and how to live in alignment with our planet, how to manifest the society that we want to see. And so I just thought that was so interesting that they're actually doing that. So he's getting investors involved, and people can begin buying homes, and they'll begin building, and people apparently in by the year 2030, so 8 years from now, folks will be moving in. And so that got me thinking. It got me thinking about something that maybe you've heard me mentioned before, which is something called deep ecology. Deep ecology is it's a movement, and it's also a philosophy. It's a way of thinking, and it's a movement that's been sort of gaining traction over the years. I think the term was first coined by a Norwegian philosopher named Arne Næss. And he's like a naturalist and a mountaineer, and he was a scholar of Gandhi. I think he was born in 1912 or something like that. And so it's basically saying that all of nature is not subordinate to humanity, and asks how we can manifest a society or a system more in alignment with our core values. And so it requires this kind of internal shift in our thinking, in our relationships to the world, to the natural world, to each other. I'll read you something. This is a quote from Judy Berry, who is an activist. And she says, she's an environmental activist, and she says, deep ecology or biocentrism is a law of nature that exists independently of whether humans recognize it or not. And the failure of modern society to acknowledge this as we attempt to subordinate all of nature to human use has led to the brink of collapse of the Earth's life support systems. Biocentrism is an ancient native wisdom, but in the context of today's industrial society, biocentrism is profoundly revolutionary, challenging the system to its core. So this concept is just, it's basically very Buddhist, and it's simply questioning, it questions the morality or ethics of our current societal system of growth. And right, the system that perpetuates the conditions for overconsumption and waste and greed and grasping and clinging and the destruction of our planet and our ultimate demise, all of these things that are sort of swirling around us at this time. Sila, morality, virtue, ethics, wise conduct, wise action, wise livelihood, all of these ways that we are taught in this practice to interrelate, to interbe. And so this is really just related to how we move about in the world, how we care for ourselves and each other. Seems very simple, caring for one another, caring for the planet. We're kind of stuck in this system. So in our practice, we work with something called precepts, right? All of us have heard, at least probably most of you are familiar with the five lay precepts. You practice with the eight on retreat or in the Vinaya Pitaka, which is the basket, the one of the third baskets, which holds all of the precepts, I believe. For monks, there's some 227, and for nuns, I think there's 311, but for us, there's only five. And so what could our world look like and or be like if we just followed these five simple trainings? And so I came across recently Plum Village, Thich Nhat Hanh's Plum Village. They have what he refers to as mindfulness trainings, and they're parallel to the precepts, but they're just sort of an updated version. And they've updated those more recently, and I just think the recent ones are so beautiful, and they are sort of a more relevant take, a more modern take that sort of may resonate with the way that we live and walk in our lives today. So I just kind of wanted to refresh or introduce them to you or share them with you, these the five mindfulness trainings at Plum Village. And this revised version is just so beautiful. So I'll just read them aloud to you, and you can just listen or even close your eyes and repeat them silently to yourself if you'd like. And then we will have some discussion. So let me open them up here. And so Plum Village says that the five mindfulness trainings represent the Buddhist vision for a global, for global spirituality and ethics. So how we can begin to interrelate or even, continue this pattern and this growth of this movement, which is really deep ecology. It's an internal shift that then impacts us globally. And so the first one is reverence for life. And so I'll read it to you. Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I am committed to cultivating the insight of interbeing and compassion, and learning ways to protect the lives of people, animals, plants, and minerals. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to support any act of killing in the world, in my thinking, or in my way of life. Seeing that harmful actions arise from anger, fear, greed, and intolerance, I will cultivate openness, non-discrimination, and non-attachment to views in order to transform violence, fanaticism, and dogmatism in myself and the world. So that's quite a take on that first mindfulness training, reverence for life. The next is entitled True Happiness, which I think is very interesting. I think this one is referring to not taking what's not given, and it's titled True Happiness. Aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, and oppression, I'm committed to practicing generosity in my thinking, speaking, and acting. I am determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. And I will share my time, energy, and material resources with those who are in need. I will practice looking deeply to see that the happiness and suffering of others are not separate from my own happiness and suffering. That true happiness is not possible without understanding and compassion, and that running after wealth, fame, power, and sensual pleasures can bring much suffering and despair. I'm aware that happiness depends on my mental attitude and not on external conditions, and that I can live happily in the present moment simply by remembering that I already have more than enough conditions to be happy. I am committed to practicing right livelihood so that I can help reduce the suffering of living beings on earth and stop contributing to climate change. I think that is just so beautiful. True happiness. So it's really around this spirit of generosity. And that's the take on not taking what's not given. But I think the expansion is really quite resonant. Applies to our how we are living today. The next is entitled True Love. True Love. Let's see how this resonates. Aware of the suffering caused by sexual misconduct. Next one, let me just pause for a moment because I want to say something about our sexual energy, sexual misconduct. It's an energy, it's clearly impactful. You know, we see it manifesting in all kinds of ways, coming out sideways in our society, in our family systems, you know, in many communities, you know, coming out that way. So sexual energy is something that is natural for us. It's something that is beautiful, and it's a part of, it's a beautiful part of being a human being and living in these bodies. There's healthy ways to manage and work with our sexual energy. And so I think that is what is being referred to, referenced here and cultivated. So aware of the suffering caused by sexual misconduct, I am committed to cultivating responsibility and learning ways to protect the safety and integrity of individuals, couples, families, and society. Knowing that sexual desire is not law, and that sexual activity motivated by craving alone can be harmful to myself and others. I will do everything in my power to protect children from sexual abuse and to prevent couples and families from being broken by sexual misconduct. Seeing that body and mind are one, I am committed to learning appropriate ways to take care of my sexual energy and cultivating loving kindness, compassion, joy, and inclusiveness, which are the four basic elements of true love. Kindness, compassion, joy, and inclusiveness are the four basic elements of true love. For my greater happiness and the greater happiness of others, practicing true love, we know that we will continue beautifully into the future. So that is beautiful. And so there are two more. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech. Well, this one is called loving speech and deep listening. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to listen to others, I am committed to cultivating loving speech and compassionate listening in order to relieve suffering and to promote reconciliation and peace in myself and among other people, ethnic and religious groups, all nations. Knowing that words can create happiness or suffering, I am committed to speaking truthfully, using words that inspire confidence, joy, and hope. Imagine if we all used words that inspire confidence, joy, and hope. When anger is manifesting in me, I am determined not to speak. I will practice mindful breathing, walking in order to recognize and to look deeply into my anger. I know that the roots of anger can be found in my wrong perceptions and lack of understanding of the suffering in myself and other people. I will speak and listen in a way that can help myself and other people to transform suffering and see the way out of difficult situations. I am determined not to spread news that I do not know to be certain, and not to utter words that can cause division or discord. I will practice right diligence to nourish my capacity for understanding love, joy, and inclusiveness, and gradually transform anger, violence, and fear that lie deep in my consciousness. Loving speech and deep listening. And the last one is referred to as nourishment and healing. And I think this was in reference to a consuming intoxicants. This is interesting. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I am committed to cultivating good health, both physically and mentally, for myself, my family, my society, by practicing mindful eating and drinking and consuming. I will practice looking deeply into how I consume the four kinds of nutriments, which are edible foods, sense impressions, volition, so how we move about in our bodies, and consciousness. I'm determined not to gamble or use alcohol or drugs. And I would say for us as a community, because this is where the monastic community and our communities are a little bit different, how we are exposed to things. I mean, sugar is an addiction for some of us. And so my philosophy is harm reduction, right? We can't be perfect people all the time. And so working with our addictions or how we consume, even Netflix or whatever it is, I think harm reduction, but I'll read this to you. I am determined not to gamble or to use alcohol, drugs, or any other products which contain toxins, such as certain websites, electronic games, TV programs, films, magazines, books, and conversations. I will practice coming back to the present moment to be in touch with the refreshing, healing, and nourishing elements in me and around me. Not letting regrets and sorrow drag me back into the past, or letting anxiety, fear, or craving pull me out of the present. I'm determined not to try to cover up loneliness, anxiety, or other suffering by losing myself in consumption. I will contemplate interbeing and consume in a way that preserves peace, joy, and well-being in my body and consciousness, and in the collective body and consciousness of my family, my society, and the earth. So the revised 5 mindfulness trainings, so beautiful, in my opinion, the intention of those trainings, these precepts that we sometimes take or that we commit ourselves to. And I think many of us have probably already just sort of naturally evolved into this type of living as adults in many ways. And each of us have our places and where we are working and growing in our development. So what kind of a world will we be manifesting just by practice? Can you imagine all of us practicing just these 5 simple trainings? What might be different? What might transform? What might we see? So I've talked this to the end.
Saira, thank you so much for that talk and for the insights from Thich Nhat Hanh.